Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking tax extensions, click to cancel, and the value of money.
That's right, buddy. This is our Friday flight. And by the way, it's Good Friday. So happy, well, happy Good Friday to folks, or if not, good day to you, sir. but either way, we are going to talk about the best stories that we came across this week. And specifically, we're going to address how they pertain to your personal finances, your money.
Do you have a favorite Easter candy?
Oh, okay. So the robin's egg.
Those are great.
As a kid, I remember eating those candies, and they've got the little malt centers, and they fell off my radar for like years and years. And it wasn't until I was in high school that I came across one of those, and I was like, it's the candy from my childhood.
Rekindled your love affair.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I'm a Cadbury cream egg guy, although I know those can be polarizing.
Gross. I like them. Sugary goo.
It's terrible and great at the same time.
As opposed to dry, crunchy sugariness, which is inside the middle of a malt ball, essentially.
I don't know why I like those. Because I do kind of, sometimes they do repulse me a little.
If you think about it, they kind of gross you out.
What's wrong with me? But I don't know. I kind of like them too.
They always had the best commercials back in the late 80s and 90s with a lot, you know, everyone's trying out to be the bunny, like the Cadbury.
Yes, those were good. All right, I want to ask you a quick question. So every Monday, you and I, we go get coffee at our local coffee shop. We do it once a week to kind of make sure that we don't get too addicted to it, and it makes it kind of a highlight of the week,
right? It's a special occasion. It's special a good thing. Way to shake off the weekend a little bit and say, you know what, it's time to get down to business.
Yeah, right. Okay, so the other day we were there, grabbed some coffee, and then I was picking up something else that they sell as like a present for a friend. And when we get coffee, we always tip well because we're not jerks. But then when I got a physical good,
15%, to me at least, that feels like the what you would pay at the window when it comes to coffee. Because they're making the drink, but it's also, you're standing there waiting, you walk up to the window, it's that kind of thing.
Yes. All right.
But it's not like a full-on sit-down restaurant.
Question for you, because afterwards I went back and I had to get actual like a good.
An item.
That they sell.
Pre-made.
An item they sell. And the same tipping thing came up, and I was like, love you guys. I'm not going to tip on this, though, because it's literally just handing me the thing in a bag.
Yeah, they just turned around, grabbed it, and then gave it to you.
Paying, tipping for the coffee because it's like something that needs to be made, it feels completely different.
There's some tender love and care that goes into making those. Yes. Well, lately we've been getting those flat whites.
Yeah, I'm like, don't spit in my flat white. I'll tip you well. But when it comes to tipping on top of that, I get why. Like, it's just the standard screen that pops up no matter what they're selling.
So you did zero tip.
I did zero tip on that.
I think your conscience should be completely clear.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Just want to make sure. It was basically these handmade bitters that one of their friends sells.
I think that is totally fine.
Just wanted to make sure I wasn't being a
No, it's an item. It should be. It's not like when you go to the store to buy a tangible good.
Right.
They're not asking you to tip at the grocery store or any sort of even a homemade goods kind of store. Right. They're not necessarily asking you to tip. It's just a transaction. So
that's how I felt.
I think
about
you should be. Yeah, you're totally in the clear.
Okay.
In my book. But if you disagree, you can email Joel directly.
I feel like you're my Catholic priest. I'm like going to confession.
Your sins have been absolved, sir.
Good to know. All right. So let's move on, Matt. Let's get to the Friday flight samplings of stories we found interesting this week and how they pertain to your personal finances. Let's talk about taxes for just a second. We got a lot of good stuff to get to, by the way. And the tax deadline, just over a week away. And just kind of word of the wise, just want to make a note, make sure to file an extension on your taxes if you need to, if you have not yet filed. Not everyone needs to, though, actually. A lot of California residents in particular have extra time to file because of like some of the insane weather events that have happened there this year. And I think they have until like October 16th. But if you're like planning on getting a refund, if you think you're going to get a refund, there's no need. Well, and you're prepared. There's no need to wait. As long as you can, feel free to file early if you want. But filing an extension, by the way, it doesn't mean that you don't have to pay the estimated tax that you might owe. So if you're like, I'm going to file an extension in hopes that I can like wait longer,
weasel my way out of this,
the government, that's not how it works. You will owe penalties and interest in all likelihood if you do that. So, but make sure to file that extension or file your taxes because that's coming up soon. By the way, Matt saw the stat. The average person spends somewhere between 11 and 13 hours doing their taxes.
That's terrible.
And $250 to do it as well, which just feels wild. That's like a long time. And I get it. I feel like it takes me a long time, even though I'm not doing my taxes, just gathering all the stuff to send to the person who does my taxes for me. I'm glad they handle it because it would just be a complete annoyance. But even just the gathering of the stuff is just a pain too.
I feel like it's more of a mental weight than anything else.
Yeah,
as opposed to the actual time. Because if I actually were to quantify the amount of time that I spent getting my forms together, like I'd guess I spent maybe about 30 minutes doing taxes this year. Literally, I'll tell you a trick.
I probably build it up more in my mind.
Exactly. It's more of a mental weight, like a mental emotional sort of weight, as opposed to the time that goes into it. But I will say one of the things I do that I've found myself doing every single year now is, so a little tip, label and name your files really well from previous years and just keep a tax folder, and you've got all your different years of filing your taxes there within that folder. And then as you're getting your documents together, look back at that previous year. That way you know what forms to look for. And so I use that basically as like my template, as a basis. Obviously, as I receive 1098s or 1099s notifications via email, I go and I get them and I just kind of plop them in that folder.
Mm-hmm.
But then I go and label those, and whatever ones I'm missing, that's when I go and then hunt those down.
Yeah.
Makes it super easy to
the labeling
organize,
so helpful,
but then also it makes it easy for my tax preparer as well, because she knows my system.
Yeah.
So I think it makes it easier
for her
as well.
You're probably like really easy to work with. She's probably like, man, he's the best client ever.
Yeah.
That guy Joel, he's a little squirrely.
Very well labeled. But yeah, I wanted to mention that. And also on that note, did you know that 70% of Americans qualify to use the IRS free file system? But it turns out that only 2% of Americans actually go that route. So 70% qualify, only 2% of Americans actually use that as an option. So I wanted folks to know that that's something you can take advantage of if you make $73,000 or less, or your AGI if it's 73 or less, you qualify to file via the free file system.
So even if you make 90, but you max out your 401k, you qualify for
ding, ding, ding.
IRS free file.
Exactly.
And Cash App Taxes is another one we've talked about as like a great system that allows you to file federal and state for free. So if you're like, got to get on that this weekend. Yes, you do. And either of those places
next weekend too
would be a great place.
You got a solid, you got 10 plus days to knock this thing out.
Yeah.
But do it this weekend.
Do it this weekend.
Yeah.
Right. Why not? Get it off your to-do list. Get it off your plate. All right, let's talk about housing, Matt, for a second. What's going on with real estate now? Things have shifted over the last year in particular. But so much of how they've shifted and what's happening depends on where you live. Like, everyone knows the saying, location, 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 in terms of real estate. And that's always true, right? But it's even truer right now. The Wall Street Journal, they just published a map of where home prices are going up and where they're falling.
This is a crazy map.
It's crazy to see. It's really, really interesting.
Yes.
As guys who are kind of real estate nerds ourselves, it's like, I don't know. I'm just kind of curious to see what's happening around the nation. And it's largely what's happening with home prices is an East Coast versus West Coast phenomena. Like, I don't know. I really know nothing about rap or rap battles or anything like that. But isn't that like a thing, like East Coast versus West Coast in terms of rappers?
Yeah, like back in the 90s.
Okay. Not anymore?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Well, I don't think they care anymore.
And then the Southern groups like Outkast, they're their own thing, right?
Oh, yeah. Southern rap's a completely different beast. And I feel like they dominate.
They stayed above the fray.
I think so.
Okay. Well, San Francisco, San Jose, and Seattle, they're all seeing significant drops in home prices in the neighborhood of like 10% year over year, which is interesting to see.
Okay, before we get any further from rap battles, did you watch Hustle and Flow back in the day?
Oh, yeah, I love that movie. Okay. Yeah, that was great.
I just want to make sure. I don't think we've ever talked about
that
movie.
That was like Memphis rap scene right there, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, my wife's from Memphis, so I had to watch it.
Okay, good. It's like required watching in order to date.
She's Emily. Like, you can't date me unless you watch this movie.
Her mom actually made you watch
it. Right. Exactly. No, I love that one. Terrence Howard just like...
So good.
Great actor.
So good.
All right, but so West Coast, we're seeing these price drops somewhere in the neighborhood of 10%. In some of these major cities. East Coast, the opposite is happening, because like even in like Buffalo, right, which I was kind of shocked to see, but Buffalo, Miami, Orlando, they're seeing significant price increases despite rising rates. And so the stats even show, Matt, that where we live, the cost of a single family home in Atlanta is up 49% over the past 3 years, and it's gone up over the past year. So it's just a reminder that housing trends really are an incredibly local thing, and they're constantly shifting too. So depending on where you live, you might have been like, man, Seattle is completely unaffordable. Well, guess what? It has gotten a whole lot more affordable. Granted, rates are still like not awesome, and so affordability as a whole isn't great. But prices are coming down in a lot of cities where prices were kind of up in the stratosphere.
Sure. It's a good note that even though the median house price nationwide has decreased, it depends specifically what coast you're on, which side of Denver specifically that you're on, whether you're on the east or western side of that city.
Yeah. Or like Boise, for instance. Sometimes it's about which cities pop the hardest. Sometimes those fall the furthest. And so I think Boise home prices are down a good bit too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so while we're talking about real estate affordability, let's mention a recent article in our local paper, the AJC.
Which I usually use to pick up dog poop personally. But
okay, so they were... it was the online version that I was reading. But they were talking about accessory dwelling units, ADUs, and how they can continue to help solve the affordable housing problem here in our country, specifically because they add density, especially in older neighborhoods. And that density would be otherwise hard to create, but more units, more competition in the rental space. All of these things lead to lower prices. Sadly, ADUs are actually still illegal in many states and different municipalities. I saw that California, Florida, Texas, and Georgia account for about 50% of ADUs across the country.
Four states.
Go Georgia.
Yeah.
But they're not a silver bullet, of course, but we think that building more of these things, more of these ADUs, is a good thing, but it's not going to solve the housing shortage that we face by itself. It's expected that we're going to continue to see housing prices over the next decade continue to rise as more folks enter into that house buying stage of life, as more millennials in particular are looking to own.
Yeah. And I think building an ADU, if you're like, I kind of want to get into real estate investing, but I'm not sure I want to buy a quadplex or anything like that. If you own a home and you've got the space to build an ADU, that can be the perfect way to get your feet wet.
Right?
And so I think a lot of How to Money listeners, if it's legal where you live and if it's kind of becoming a thing, it might be worth looking into. I will say this. I think some people are starting to build what's known as junior ADUs. I don't know if you've seen that, but those are even smaller. And those,
like tiny homes?
They're not required to have a bathroom in them, though. And so I think that's probably a bad move for a lot of people, because the lack of a bathroom is going to prevent it from being as lucrative as it could be. And even though it might be cheaper to build out, it's probably not going to add the value you're hoping
junior
for.
Like a shipping container that's your office, I guess.
I guess.
You know? Like,
it's
just a lot you can do if you don't have a bathroom in there, man.
I know. But regular ADUs, I think, can make sense from a societal standpoint, but also often from like an individual standpoint, building something in your yard to make some extra money.
I like it.
Let's talk about home renovations for a second, Matt. Those have also fallen prey to inflation in a big way, causing a lot of folks to opt for the DIY route. They're saying, you know what? Instead of hiring this person to do this project for me, I guess I'm just going to do it myself. And hourly wages for general construction workers are up in the neighborhood of 40% in the past few years. And renovation jobs are apparently taking something like 2.5 times longer on average over the past few years. And so at the same time, materials cost more too. So it just feels like a tough time to renovate. And I think making that decision is always tough for folks. Like, should I update the kitchen, the bathroom, or add on that porch? It's just never an easy decision. And there are a lot of finances involved when you're talking about doing any sort of renovation to your home. It's a major financial conundrum. But our prediction is that it's going to be cheaper, actually, for lots of folks to renovate instead of moving in a whole lot of the country, especially if it means giving up a super low locked-in interest rate. So I know it can be hard, and you might say the timeline's longer, the expense is more. But if you're planning to do a renovation, crunch the numbers and see which one makes more sense. Just be sure to save diligently so that you're not taking on a bunch of high interest rate debt to fuel that renovation.
Sure, yeah. And if you thought that this is something you're going to be able to do overnight with a snap of some fingers, think again. Any contractor that I've talked to recently, I mean, they're booked out into the summer. And so ask around. We're actually having some work done to our house. We're screening in a back porch. And guess who we ended up using? Somebody our neighbors used. And it was a great recommendation. And so certainly look to neighbors and ask them, are you happy with their work? How have they been on the quote, on the price that they gave you? How quick have they been? How's the quality? Those are going to be the factors that you're going to want to consider. And I do think it's true that they typically say you get two out of those three, right?
Yeah.
So in our case,
good, fast, or cheap.
Our guy is good. And he's pretty affordable, but he is not fast. But that works for us. That's something that we're willing to give on there. Joe, let's talk about whether or not folks should work a job that they hate if it means making more money. That was actually the subject of a recent YouGov poll. And the results showed that as folks get older, that they're more willing to get paid less money in order to enjoy the work that they're performing. Which I think that makes a whole lot of sense. These are folks who have likely dealt with some crappy jobs over the years or even decades at this point. And they're also typically going to be more financially stable, right? So that they have the ability to opt for a healthy lifestyle over a bigger paycheck. That being said, like, we know that these decisions are never going to be easy as you're trying to decide, in particular, if you're talking about maybe even taking a pay cut. But what it is that you decide will likely depend on like what your particular money and what your family situation looks like, right? Like the number of folks who are dependent on you. It might make sense to maybe temporarily sacrifice the career path and doing something that you truly love in order to get that bigger paycheck, at least for a short period of time, if that means that's going to allow you to achieve some important personal finance milestones. But man, it can be draining to go to a job that you hate each and every day. So you got to keep that in mind as well. You know, you'll likely be better off cutting some expenses and maybe finding a more sustainable path by pursuing some meaningful work as opposed to just grinding it out and working a job that you hate.
Yeah, I feel like it doesn't have to be a dichotomy, though. It's interesting.
That's true.
That's an interesting question to be asked. And so I like this poll because it really does shed some light kind of on what people value. And it makes sense, like you said, that people who are older, who've been in the workforce a long time, who do have more money on hand, that they might say, you know what? Yeah, I'm not willing to do a job I hate any longer. And I think younger people, though, need to weigh a bunch of different things when they're kind of making that choice. But it also doesn't have to be at this binary between money or happiness. It's not like they're diverging paths of which you can only pick one. And like there are just infinite middle grounds where I think you can like your job. You don't have to love it. It doesn't have to be the passion of your life or something like that. And it's quite possible to grow big wealth in life on a modest income too. So you might say, you know, I feel like we, like the question we had on a recent Ask HTM from a librarian, she's like, I love my job. I don't want to go out there and make more. And she's trying to figure out how to kind of achieve all her money goals on a modest salary. And I think that's great. Like, I think know yourself. And sometimes making less to do the work that you love is the best choice. And sometimes, at least for a while, like you said, it makes sense to sacrifice the ideal job for you in order to grow your income because you have other goals, other things that you need to achieve. But I agree, being able to show up at work and not hate your life is pretty important too. So we definitely don't wish that on anyone. I don't think there's any need to take that extreme of a route, right?
Yeah, like it's not 100% one or the other. I totally agree. There's a wide spectrum that you get to choose from. But I do think it is interesting to see, though, that as folks get older, they start making that switch from valuing money versus valuing their time, right? Like it's a natural sort of progression because you begin to see that, oh, this resource that you thought you had a ton of when you were younger. You're mm-hmm. looking ahead and it seemed like time is infinite. It's like, oh, I can always do that tomorrow. But you know, once you start getting up in the years a little bit, you realize, and this is something you've always known, but you realize, oh, well, I've got a limited number of years left here on this planet, and how it is I get to spend my days, that impacts a lot of my life, a lot of my actual happiness.
Spoken like someone
who is actually aging,
experience going over the hill.
We're
I'm not there yet. So.
We're all aging, but I think you'll be here soon, my friend. I also think this is a reason.
That's what you think.
Why we're such big fans of Coast Fire as well, right? So FIRE, that's the Financial Independence Retire Early movement. And Coast Fire is all about doing the heavy lifting on the front end. And I think to a large extent, that's sort of what we've done. And that has allowed us to do something like create this fun podcast that at the time we're like, is this going to work out? Are we going to be able to make any money doing right. this? I'm not totally sure. But
it allows us to take a risk that we otherwise absolutely. Would have felt unable to take. And when you while you're doing that job and you're like, it's not my favorite, start banking for kind of the future and for those other decisions you want to make. Having more financial margin, having more cash on hand, making better moves with your money now allows you to make those choices to do stuff that you love later on.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like you and I are super lucky because we get to do something we truly do love. But for a lot of folks, it's baby steps between doing a job that you don't necessarily love in order to make the maximum amount of money. But then you just take that next small step towards doing something maybe that you like a little bit more, even if it doesn't necessarily get you the most bang for your buck.
Yeah.
But enough about that, Joel. We've got additional stories that we're going to get to. We're going to discuss how hopefully very soon it'll be much easier for us to cut some subscriptions from our lives. And we're going to talk about dynamic pricing, how maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. We'll discuss all of that right after this.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach.
Yeah, we do.
Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. All right, Matt, the Friday flight continues. But as always, we've got to get to our ludicrous headline of the week. This one comes from the Harvard Business Review, the astute people at the Ivy League institution. And the headline goes, too many employees cash out their 401ks when leaving a job.
This is the headline we agree with.
Yes, they do.
Too many folks are doing this.
It's a problem, right? And you and I, we've talked about how switching jobs can be great for your income, which is so true, especially kind of what's happening in the economy right now. We've seen more job openings per people looking for jobs, mm-hmm. which means you've got, it's not like shooting fish in a barrel, but it's kind of close to it. And it's easier than ever to go out and make more money.
Sure. Well, you don't have to leave your job in order to make more. We talked with Alex Carter a couple weeks ago, episode 649. And she talked about how you can negotiate that raise while keeping that job that you love.
Exactly. But when people are leaving their jobs, when they do mosey down the road, and let's say they do it in order to get a 15, 20, 30% pay raise, congrats, but they're making one major mistake when they do it. They're cashing out their 401k at the same time. There's like a dark underbelly to this move down the street when people are cashing out their 401k. And Harvard Business Review says that 40%+ of folks cash out their retirement account on the way out the door, which is a terrible idea.
Yeah, it's a bad move.
On so many levels, because it means that those dollars are no longer working on your behalf. Plus, you're going to owe taxes and a 10% penalty. And so this money, it might not actually be untouchable, but you should think of it that way. Touching it is and grabbing it and starting, you know, spending that money is one of the worst things you could do.
Yeah, basically we want you to think about it as if you were stealing this from another person, and it kind of is another person, your future self.
Yeah,
we don't want you to ransack your retirement account.
Don't pick your own pocket.
And so as you receive a letter from your employer, they're going to ask you what do you want to do with this 401k. You can either cash it out, leave it put, you can either roll it over. We would suggest the latter. To don't cash it out, either let it be if you are with a provider that has low to no fees and great investing options, or use a company like Capitalize and roll that 401k over to another provider that does have low fees and who is also going to allow you to reach your investing goals. But it's not all bad news when it comes to retirement accounts. Let's take a look at the bright side for a second. And Gen Z investors, they were the only segment of the population to see their balances go up last year in 2022. This is according to Fidelity. And so the average account balance was down in the 23% range, which makes sense considering it's about what the S&P was down, for instance, last year. Gen Z investors, they saw their balances go up by around 14%.
How could that be, Matt?
Which is huge. The reason is, it's because they don't have that much invested yet, right? And so even when the market tanks, it barely has an impact on their overall net worth. But, you know, simultaneously what they're doing, they are continuing to push money into the retirement plans. When you are a young investor and when you don't have a large sum built up yet, it's less about the conditions of the market. It has more to do with your contributions, it's more about the contributions, and it's not the conditions that have an impact on younger investors. It makes me think back to like 08.
Preach, brother.
08 and 09. I feel like both of us, we were just getting started as like serious investors.
That's
we'd kind of dabbled a little bit.
I was in that exact same position as these Gen Zers where it was like, almost nothing inside of my retirement account at that point, but I'm buying at a discount.
It's the perfect time
to buy. Everyone else is freaking out, and I'm like, it feels like it's a good time for me to be investing now.
And it's not what they're going to hear in the headlines. It's not what they're going to see, and all of that is there to instill fear in investors, maybe not intentionally. It's not like media outlets are trying to get you to not invest. They're just trying to grab your attention. But if you're just getting started, those are headlines that you do not need to pay attention to.
Yeah, when the market is plunging, I'm glad Gen Z kept buying, and I hope they just keep buying, because that's the way you're going to grow wealth over time. And it starts real small. I mean, those first few years, it didn't feel like I was making much of an impact, much of a dent. But I'm so glad I started investing when I did, and hope our Gen Z listeners are doing the same. All right, let's talk about subscriptions for a second, Matt. It's no secret that we're drowning in subscriptions as Americans. It feels like every business in the country wants somewhere between $5 and $20 every single month for every single one of us. And it can feel like chump change when you're signing up. Okay, $5 for this, $10 for that. But all of those subscriptions add up to meaningful dollars exiting our accounts every month to the tune of, I want to say it's like $219 on average is what the average American pays in subscriptions every month. But most of us assume we're spending more like $100. So we're just like way off in how much we think we're spending. We're spending a lot more. And you know what makes some of these subscriptions even more insidious is that when we do inevitably want to cancel, some of these companies make it almost impossible to get out of that subscription. And the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, wants to do something about that. They just made a new proposal this week.
That's right. Yeah. So they're proposing it's a click to cancel rule that's going to force companies to make it as easy to cancel that particular subscription as it was to sign up for it in the first place. And so obviously they make it, you know, as easy as pie for you to sign up in seconds online or from whatever app that you're using. But then they want you to call a phone number. They want you to mail a letter. They want you to send a fax, jump through a bunch of hoops in order to ditch their service. And so this is just a proposal right now by the FTC. It's open to consumer comments at the moment. But, you know, as we see subscriptions proliferate, as that's becoming more and more of the business model of different companies, I think that making sure that the companies don't make canceling a subscription a nightmare, that that's going to be so important to us as consumers.
Yeah. Yep. I've encountered that a few times in my life. I hate that when companies do that. So easy to sign up, so hard to ditch. But
it's like a Chinese finger trap.
It feels like that. Yeah.
It's like it's so easy to get my finger in this thing. Did you ever play with those as a kid?
I did. Okay. My kids like to play with them. But yeah, it really does feel like that lots of times. Like they're enticing us into this relationship and then making it really hard for us to exit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about something else maybe that we don't like on the payment front right now, Matt. The Apple started rolling out its Buy Now, Pay Later service last week to a few users, and they're going to be granting access, they say, to more in the coming months. And so now, How to Money listeners and everyone across the country is going to have another option to pay for stuff in 4 easy installments over 6 weeks without paying interest or fees, which just sounds so nice when you say it that way, but it's not good. We're still pretty down on Buy Now, Pay Later as an industry, and clearly it's not doing so hot these days. I mean, those stocks were high-flying during the pandemic, but they've been walloped since then in recent months. But it's pretty much always been bad from a consumer psychology standpoint, too. So if you're a heavy Apple user and you like using Apple Pay, that's totally fine. Apple Pay is great. But don't let Tim Cook and company make it so easy to overspend and keep you from your financial goals if you get early access to Apple Pay Later. Well, it's something that we want you to avoid because it just makes it so easy to buy stuff based on payments as opposed to whether or not you can actually afford it.
And the actual total cost of whatever doohickey it is that you're buying.
And we've seen, when you look at the numbers and when you look at the anecdotes, there's just so many people who get in trouble via this because it's psychological candy for people, similar to those nefarious subscriptions. Like, it's so easy to sign up, and then it can be so hard to dig out of the financial trouble that you gotten yourself into.
That's right. Yeah. So another note on the consumption front, inflation. It's been busting budgets nationwide, and because of that, we think that yours likely needs an update. A lot of people are spending more than they think that they are. Kind of like going back to your talking about subscriptions, how we're all spending more there than we think we are. Fact is, we're doing that across the board, and this is also backed by data, judging by the bigger credit card balances and how quickly they've been increasing over the past couple of years. We are a fan of spring cleaning your budget, just revisiting it, maybe dusting it off at least once a year, at the very least. But especially with inflation changing expenses in all of our lives, in all the different categories, it's more important than usual. We don't want you rolling with last year's budget. It's going to be most of the time where we want you to be like a late adopter when it comes to products or technology, because it's going to allow you to save money. But when it comes to your budget, we want you to be, it's like a raven. What is it? Like when you're on the leading edge of something and you're basically spreading the good news of whatever it is. That's how we want you approaching your budget, at least. And one of the tactics, I guess, that you could take is to consider increasing your budget amount by like maybe 3-5% every year so that you don't end up underestimating and then dipping into your savings consistently each and every month. I think the problem with by not doing that is if you're just blowing your budget every single month, all of a sudden this budget that used to be helpful when it came to your personal finances all of a sudden becomes not only unrealistic, but it also then turns into something that's unattainable.
Yeah.
And I think when that shift happens,
you're just like, I'm gonna kick it to the curb, it's not helping me.
Exactly. And if that were to be the case, you can toss the baby out with the bathwater and you are no longer disciplined. We want you to stick with some of those practices that is going to allow you to achieve some of your different money goals.
If you're like, oh, this budget's not working anymore, well, update it. Don't toss it out.
Exactly.
Like, that's the way to go. And a lot of people, they need to update it. If you haven't in a while, yeah, you probably are spending more in 2023 than you were last year. All right, something else that might be busting budgets, though, is something known as dynamic pricing. And dynamic pricing is basically when the cost of a good or service changes based on demand. Like surge pricing from rideshare companies is the perfect example, right? When a soccer game lets out, Matt,
it's the worst time to hail an Uber.
They're going to charge you more, right? And so it might even make sense to wait or walk a mile down the road. You're probably going to save a little bit of money on that ride. Airfare works in much the same way because demand is influencing the pricing that you're going to see on that plane ticket. The more flexible you are, the more you're going to be able to save. And we would say overall, this is actually a good thing, dynamic pricing. It allows bargain hunters to save money while forcing the least flexible folks to pay more. And the Wall Street Journal detailed how this strategy is now being used by other companies, from restaurants to movie theaters to bowling alleys, and it's catching some folks off guard. And so it's just good to be aware of this trend. You're going to see it more and more. And you might not like it because you might be shocked at certain times by the price of something like a bowling lane during spring break or something like that, especially if companies go too hard in this direction. I think they could end up losing customers. And if they say, hey, it's the free market, and you're being charged like four times what you normally would for something that you're used to paying less for, they could frustrate customers. And so companies are going to have to be careful how they implement dynamic pricing. But then again, you might find that in some cases, you're going to be able to use it to your advantage to save money by doing something on off-peak hours.
Yeah.
I mean, when we talk about saving money on travel, we're always talking about flying in shoulder season and how you can save money in a bunch of different ways by zigging when other people are zagging. And I think with dynamic pricing, it coming into all these other arenas, you can do the same thing in a lot of those areas too.
Yeah, it pays to be scrappy. It pays to kind of think in a contrary-like way. And that's how we want you to approach this. If you find yourself being quoted, perhaps, like you said, a pretty high fee to maybe book a tee time, because guess what? Everybody wants that tee time on that Saturday.
Hey, the great thing is when you play disc golf, tee times are free always.
Well, we've never played at one of the nicer courses where there actually are tee times because there are so many people that want to go.
I know they
exist. Where you do have to actually pay money.
I know they exist. I've never done it.
Too rich for our blood. We get where it's free. Well, let's go ahead and end this episode on maybe a bit more of a philosophical note. Like, we kind of talked about this maybe right before the break. We're talking about maybe the balance between how it is that you want to spend your time, the things that are worth pursuing, but also money, right? Money, like, we obviously, it's a great tool, but we think it's terrible as a value. We think it's not something that should be the end all be all that you're striving after. And a new poll reveals that money is increasingly the value that most folks can agree upon as a society, as a country. Patriotism, religion, family, community involvement, all of those values, all of these things have dropped off a cliff in the past couple of decades, in particular over the past few years. Axios, they said that this reveals this is a quote, a rot at the very center of our nation.
Wow.
And I mean, I can't say that we disagree, you know, like we think that making smart money decisions, we think that pursuing financial independence, that these are all great things, but doing it at the expense of some of these other more important things is not. Money is not the ultimate goal. We think that it can be the fuel for us to be able to achieve some of our most important goals. It's at least a factor that can allow us to achieve some of those goals. Yeah. It's not the end all. It's not the only fuel. It's not the only factor, but it's one of the many factors. Because at the end of the day, if you are loaded, right? You're rich, you're wealthy, but you don't have any of these other things. What kind of existence is that? I think there are going to be a lot of folks who put too high of a priority on money, and they are not cultivating some of these other things along the way, like family, you know, the desire to have kids, whatever it is that has traditionally defined some of the different values that encompass and describe us as a nation. We need to make sure that we're paying attention to those things, because I'm afraid at the end of this lifetime, after a few decades, there might be a lot of folks that have maybe a decent amount of wealth, a decent amount of money, but they don't have those other things. And I'm afraid that that's going to lead to a lot of regrets, a lot of folks who are not happy with their life.
I mean, it makes me think of our episode with Wes Moss back in the day about kind of cultivating core pursuits and finding a few different things, because the happiest retirees are ones that don't, not necessarily the people who have the biggest nest egg, but they're the people who have a broad range of interests that they pursue on a regular basis. And I think that's true of us throughout life too. And we need, and he was basically saying it's not a switch that you flip on. You're just like, cool, I'm retired. Now let me pursue something that I'm going to love. You have to be building those things along the way. And the more we duck out of some of the things that make our society great, make our lives great, like family and community involvement in favor of just bigger bank accounts, I don't think it's going to lead to greater levels of happiness. And so I hate seeing that, like, literally on that chart, everything else fell off a cliff except for money. And people are like, nope, I value this. I don't value any of these other things. And we value money, but we value all those other things too.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We want you to make the smart money moves. We want you to be in a stronger position financially, but not if it means that you don't have anything else at the end of the day, that you've lost some of those other values, in particular relationships, which can be encompassed in so many of those different categories, right? Like family, kids, parents, community,
neighbors,
all of those things. And so make sure that you are out there loving your fellow human being and that you're leaving some time and space for those relationships to thrive as well.
Yes. Occasionally we do get a little existential here on how to
money. It's not just how to money. Yeah. I mean, we joke about this before. It's like we talk about money in order for us to be able to live better lives. It's not money in as a goal in and of itself. It's about living a good life.
Yes, for sure. All right.
How to life.
How to life. Next podcast. All right. That's going to do it for this episode. And we hope you have a great weekend. Hope you have a great Easter weekend. Spend some great time with your families in your community doing stuff that matters. So, all right, Matt, until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.